Welcome back to your Healing Buddy podcast with your host, Adina Godet. I am a licensed psychotherapist who enjoys having conversations all about the different areas of mental health. I pray that from every episode, someone takes at least one nugget and is able to apply it to their personal life. Thank you so much for tuning in. Enjoy. Hey, welcome back to your Healing Buddy podcast with me, your host, Adina. So I know most of you, a lot of you, have already saw the movie, the new Tyler Perry movie, Divorce in the Black. It stars Megan Good, Corey Hardrick, and, you know, some other, you know, big people. And I thought it was really good. So me and my sister and my mom, we watched it yesterday. And we had a lot to say. We had a lot of jokes, okay? We had a lot of jokes. But we also had so much to say when it came to the trauma, the mental health side of everything that was going on kind of in the background of the movie, the root of things. So I was like, you know what? I decided to talk about it. And I saw so many conversations on social media, so many, whether it was on Instagram, on Threads, on Twitter, where TikTok was a big one too, because a lot of people were making videos about it. And so I was like, you know what? I had a lot to say too during the movie, so let's just talk about it, okay? Well, where are we gonna start though? Where are we gonna start? In general, they started the movie crazy. I said, Tyler Perry is crazy. He's crazy. How is he gonna start the film with the funeral and all of that was happening? Now, if you haven't watched it, you might need to go watch that movie. It's on Amazon Prime. And it's called Divorce in the Black by Tyler Perry. Go watch the movie, because I don't want to spoil anything, you know, because we're going to just start talking about it. But in the beginning of the movie, it was the funeral scene. Now, we come in and the preacher, which we saw was Ava, the main character, her father. The preacher, he was preaching, and at first, we don't know what's going on in the movie yet. So, of course, at first, I'm like, well, hold on. Why would he say this in his, you know, in his sermon? When you're talking over a person that has just passed, some stuff, it's like he wanted a fight to break out. Because why would you be saying, you know, he's going to go to hell. You know, he's died. He deserved to die. You don't say that when you're in the pulpit. So that already, he already started off wrong. Now, later on in the movie, I'm not going to lie. I was like, okay, now I kind of see he might not have been lying. He might be going to hell. All the stuff he was doing. But that's not the point. You don't say that at the funeral while you're preaching it. So that was already crazy how it started off. But then, of course, when the mom, the what was his name? What was the main person's name? I forgot his name. Dallas. There we go. Dallas. So when Dallas, we figured out that his, you know, that was his mom that, you know, kind of came out and got angry and was like, hold on, you're not gonna talk about my son like that. You're not gonna talk about any of my children like that. How you gonna say they're going to hell and everything? Again, I agree. Now, the whole thing was crazy and messy, but I agree you cannot just be in the pulpit saying that my sons are going to go to hell. Just is what it is. So he shouldn't have did it. He shouldn't have took the offer if he was going to do all that, if he couldn't control what he was going to say, you know? But so she gets upset, she gets angry, she's yelling. And then, you know, the wife of the pastor, which is Ava's mom, she gets up and, you know, she's trying to defend her man. I get it. You're trying to defend your man. She's trying to calm everybody down. But then, you know, the mom, Dallas's mom was like, oh, okay. And she started taking off her coat and she started taking off all her clothes. I said, oh no, she's about to fight. She's taking off her earrings. I said, oh no. I said, hold on now. This is crazy. So she's trying to fight. And of course I'm like, oh Lord, we know the pastor wife, she's going to get beat up if they do start fighting. I didn't know what was going to happen, but that didn't happen. But then after that, she's yelling at all her boys to, hey, get your brother. And everybody's like, what's she talking about? So she's like, get your brother. So they go up there and they arguing. And so then everybody starts getting up and they're kind of like, no, don't get the body. Don't get the casket. And all the brothers, like it's a lot of this. So all the brothers are kind of pushing everybody back. And they're like, look, this is what my mom said. And this is what we're doing. You're not going to disrespect us. You're not going to disrespect my brother that's passed. Okay. But then they get up there to the casket and then mom is like, no, just take the body. We're not going to get the casket because that's what they paid for. So take the casket, you know, take the body out the casket. And I was like, no, they are not going to take and get it out of the casket and drag it out. They did. They dragged it out. And then when they got outside, everybody in church is hollering. They're going crazy. They're screaming. They're all in agony. It's a lot. But they see them walk out, of course. And then the boys and the mom, they leave. But they put him in the back of the pickup truck. Just the body. Just laid it out. I said, "Woo, Jesus." So it already started on a bad note. It was just so crazy. It was a lot of drama already. And so even from that scene, though, again, sometimes you have to choose your battles. I would even say, of course, I'm not saying that the mom was right, the mom that was defending her son, and, you know, the mom of Dallas's mom, the one that was the mom of the guy who passed. I'm not saying she wasn't wrong, because she was wrong. She made that whole scene. She was trying to fight. But you have to understand something, too. When people are grieving, you cannot just say certain things to them. You don't know how people are going to respond. When people are grieving, they go through many stages. They go through anger. They go through, of course, sadness. They go through that bargaining stage where, like, dang, I wish it was me and not you. They just go through so many different stages when it comes to grief. And it's not linear either. You know, it's so many different emotions that can happen. And so, of course, with her, we see she was angry. Now, later on, again, in the movie, we see she was angry for another reason. She was just an angry woman in general because she had a lot of trauma. But at the same time, regardless, they already knew that. The pastor, so I'm going to say the pastor started off wrong again. I feel like he should have made a good and conscious decision not to take that. I don't care if his daughter asked. I get it. He was doing it for his daughter. But at the same time, if you're doing it for your daughter, you have to do it for the right purpose too. And if you did not feel like it was in your heart to really preach that sermon, you know, the eulogy for, you know, the funeral, he shouldn't have did it. So I already blame him. From a therapist perspective, he should have let that go. And also later on in the movie, we saw that the mom, for like years ago, obviously a long time ago, probably 10, 15 years ago, when her son and Ava were getting married, we saw later on that she also caused a scene there at that. So she has a track record of causing scenes. Why would you do that? I just don't understand why he did that. I feel like he started it wrong. So he shouldn't have took the job. He shouldn't have took that. So that's why I feel, and I know some people might agree or not agree, you know, some people might agree and might disagree, but I just feel like he shouldn't have did that. It could have prevented a lot when it came to, and it could have been their problem, not your problem. Now you're involved in the issue, you know. He already didn't like you guys. And the mom, you know, they already had beef. The mom had beef with them. So just is what it is. So yes, that's what I feel at first. But then, okay, we get to the other scene where we're kind of building up the characters now. So Megan Good's character, Ava, she goes to the husband's family house. They took the body, like we said, to pick up, and they threw him in the backyard somewhere, fertilizing him. They just threw him in there in the dirt. I said, Lord have mercy. But anyway, they threw him in the dirt. And they were like, yeah, he should have been buried with everybody else, you know, that we have already buried. I'm like, they can't even get these people a proper funeral, proper burial. But besides the point, we see that nobody likes her. In that family, nobody had liked her. The one, you know, his family, the one she's married to, Dallas's family, nobody liked her. And so that was already kind of, okay, hold on, kind of seeing things here. And then she gets in the car with Dallas, and she's trying to talk to him and, you know, just have a good conversation. She's like, I know your brother just died and all this has happened. I'm sorry, you know, that my dad got up there and he was saying this stuff. And, you know, all the brothers were just kind of like, you know, see, we knew she was up to nothing. You shouldn't have married her and all of this. So, okay. But then in the car, Dallas is also now yelling at Ava. And so we kind of see their marriage dynamic. Obviously, it's already verbally abusive. It's not, you know, it's not healthy at all. It's already toxic. We can see that from the beginning. The family was already toxic to her. We see that. But we see that he is also toxic in that way in this marriage, in this relationship. So I was like, okay. But again, we only saw verbal at this point. We didn't see anything else. Now, of course, later on in the movie, we see that he is abusive in all types of ways, verbally, emotionally, mentally, physically. I think they said at one point he was spitting on her. So hold on. And I was like, ooh, not spit. I couldn't have did it. But yes, so we see that he was abusive. But again, in that scene, it kind of laid out the foundation of it. Okay. So then him, the husband, Dallas, and his brothers, they ended up leaving. They left her in the car. I said, gosh. And she just sitting there waiting on them. Left her in the car, and they went to the bar somewhere. I think a cigar lounge or the bar. They were playing pool, I believe. So they went there, and Ava goes finds them. And of course, her husband is drunk. And all the, you know, all the brothers too are drunk as well, but you know, it was focusing on him. He's drunk. He's acting belligerent. And the owner of the bar knows the wife, knows Ava. So he's like, look, the only reason I let them in is because of you, you know? So get them out or whatever. So he tries to get them out, and everybody's yelling at her, like, why is she here? Again, you shouldn't have married her. And just, again, just being verbally abusive to her, to Ava. And then the husband is not, you know, he's not helping her. He's not taking her side. He's not defending her. He's letting them talk. And he's like, yeah, you need to go. Excuse me. Nobody came down here for you. But anyway, so she leaves because I guess she got tired of being verbally abused. She leaves out, and here Benji comes. So here's another character, Benji. And I guess this is someone who they all went to school with in high school. And they all came from the same country town that was about 1 hour and 30 minutes from Atlanta, where the show was, where it was filmed, where it was based. And they're from that country town. So they all know each other. So, and also, I think that's where they were at when they were burying the brother. So they were all home. So Benji comes up. And he, you know, Benji, he's coming up in as the character. You know, we like, oh, okay, hold on now. We see a little googly eyes a little bit. But in it, Ava was scared when she walked out and she saw that Benji was coming up. So Benji's all happy, like, hey, it's good to see you. He's hugging her. And Ava's looking back like, hold, she's scared. Like, she's scared. So I'm like, hold on, what's going on? And Benji is not, he's not using his context clues. He's just, you know, willy-nilly, not thinking. So she's nervous and she's scared, but she's not saying anything. She's like, hey, but she's still feeling, she's looking paranoid and suspicious, you know. So of course, who comes out? One of the brothers comes out and he's like, oh, it's Benji. And then of course, all the brothers come out and the husband. Y'all just told her to leave. I was confused about that. I said, hold on now. You just told her to leave. Now you see that Benji, whoever Benji is over outside, you know, giving her a hug and they having a conversation. Oh, now all of a sudden y'all coming outside and y'all have to be with her. Why? So then they're threatening Benji. They're like, do you want us to put you in the hospital again? I said, the hospital? They were like, you want us to put you in the hospital again? You know what we did to you last time you did this. You need to get away from her. And they're just, again, threatening him and, you know, kind of circling around him and cornering him. And like, look, you need to go before we beat you, you know, before we physically assault you. And, you know, Benji's kind of standing his ground. He was like, you know what? Let me just go. Again, obviously, they beat him up to the point where he had to go to the hospital. So it was almost deadly, we see. We didn't know when that was. Again, later on, we find out that it was in high school. But still, that was crazy. I think that's crazy to even think that they beat him up over, you know, that. So again, it also shows another dynamic that these boys are, you know, emotionally dysregulated. Definitely. They use their fists. They use their physical strength. They come together and they like to fight. And they use anger. Anger is their emotion, their primary emotion that they show, right? So when you talk about emotions and you talk about trauma, okay. So we see that. Again, we don't know why. We see they get it from mom too. Because again, like I said, mom's trying to fight in the church. So we see where they get it from. At the same time, we don't know what's going on and why it happened. And so, of course, Benji leaves, and then now Dallas is, again, drunk, and he's fussing at Ava. Ava's trying to say, hey, you're not driving back to home. I'm driving. Get in the passenger side. He's trying to push her out the way. He's yelling at her. And then his brother comes and is like, hey, you're at least, and this is the big brother. We can tell this is the big brother. He has a little bit of sense now. He's going to fight for his brothers, but it sounded like he's the only one with some sense. He was like, okay, no, you're going to get in the passenger. So he kind of got him, ruffled him up a little bit, and was like, I'm the big brother, get in the, you know, the passenger. Now, me, I wouldn't have got in the car with that man. I'm sorry. If he was doing all this, and he's acting this way, you're going to stay right here with your brothers. I don't care anymore. I don't care anymore. I'm tired of this. You're threatening people. You're threatening me. You're verbally abusing me. You're pushing me out the way. I'm good. I would have left him right on there. I don't care. You got here some way, you can go back some way. I don't care. But that's what happened in that. So again, we already kind of see, again, emotion, like we see emotions, like and kind of in it, just seeing like what's going on in the beginning. It was more so just emotional dysregulation, and then not really having a good emotional maturity to handle things in a certain way. Okay, then we get to when Ava and Dallas, they get back to Atlanta. Okay, then they're introducing their best friends. So Rona is Ava's best friend, and Jim, they're married. Rona and Jim are married, but Rona is Ava's best friend and Jim is Dallas's best friend. So that already is a dynamic there too, because again, even it's not just a couple that, you know, they know each other. One is one best friend out of the group, but then, you know, the other two kind of just got, it's like, best friend and best friends. The two best friends are with each other's best friends. So that was a dynamic that came up a lot in the movie. And I don't know if a lot of people really caught on to that. So they were introduced, and I just know that Rona kept telling Ava, like, hey, girl, you need to leave him. She kept saying it. And obviously, I guess as long as everybody's been married, she's been telling Ava, hey, you need to leave him. He's abusive. I don't know how you're, you know, still with him. I guess she's that best friend, like, hey, I'm by your side, you my friend, but you need to come on. I'm tired of this. You know, I'm tired of hearing about this. I'm tired of seeing you be abused, you know? And so they were introduced. They went to dinner. I guess they had a dinner, a couple's dinner date planned. Ava had got home from work. She said, hey, Dallas, I want to, you know, take a shower and I want to get ready so we can go to dinner and meet up with, you know, our friends. He's drinking when she gets in the house. I said, oh, Lord, he's already drinking before he gets to the dinner. I can already see it's not going to be good. But then he again starts attacking her, and it sounds like he's projecting some feelings here. When he's saying things like, oh, well, what do you need to go take a shower for? You know, you just work a job and you sit there all day, you know, because she worked at the bank. Well, you just sit there all day. You ain't doing nothing. Okay. You make okay money. Like, he's just putting her down. Like, he's really trying to manipulate. And just, so we see again, it's not even just verbally abusive. Again, he's emotionally abusing her by putting things down, you know, saying things about her job, just, you know, downplaying things that she has going on, not trying to make it, not giving her compliments, but, you know, basically criticizing her for the things that are good in her life. Okay, so that's where that was introduced there too. And so he was just like, well, what you need to take a shower for? And she's like, well, I've been at work all day. Why can't she not take a shower? So again, he's just trying to talk, and he's like, well, you're going to take a long time, and, you know, whatever, I'm not gonna sit here and wait on you. And she's like, well, just, I'm gonna be quick, just hold on. So she goes take a shower, comes back, she's ready. That man left her to go to the dinner. I said, what in the world? He could have waited. He could have waited. But also, I think too, what was the point of going without you? The reason you're going is so you can, you know, be with your, that's time that you could spend and everything. So again, like we said, the dynamic was just terrible, the marriage dynamic. And so here we go. He left, she ends up still going and meets up. He gets there and they're like, the couple, Rona and Jim, again, the best friends, they're like, well, where's Ava? They looking all around. Where's Ava? He's like, oh, I left her. I wasn't gonna sit there and wait on her, you know, what she need to shower for. So of course the best friend Rona walks out and she's calling Ava. She's like, hey, when you get here, I'm walking in with you. He should not have left you, and you know, you're walking in by yourself. Anything could have happened, you know, just, you know, being a friend. So she comes, they come in. Okay, cool. So when Ava sits down, he doesn't want to talk to her. He's already acting crazy. He's saying things. And then I guess something had happened where, oh, also another thing to note, Dallas was very disrespectful also to Rona, which again was Ava's best friend. But one thing that got me was, you're being disrespectful to her, but that's also your best friend's wife. So I don't know, I'm starting to see that a little bit. I'm like, Jim's, he says stuff, but I'm sorry. If that was my best friend and you continue to first of all, you're not going to be disrespecting my wife anyway. We won, right? When you get married, you're one. So that's basically like you're disrespecting me. Well, I don't understand why he just let her do that. I could not understand for the life of me why he would just be like, stop, man, that's my wife. Stop, boy. So anyway, again, the dynamics were crazy. So he's disrespecting her. He's like, stop disrespecting my wife. But then he just finally, he's getting loud. And it's a fancy restaurant. It's a real fancy restaurant. So I'm confused as why he's yelling anyway. But again, remember, he was drunk already before he got there. So he's yelling, again, being belligerent, just being disrespectful to other people's space, energy, time, all of that. The environment, just being disrespectful. And then he just randomly yells out, I can't do this anymore. I'm getting a divorce. Put the papers in, whatever. And he was just looking distraught, like, you want a divorce? Like, girl, we was telling you, you need to be getting a divorce. Everybody's telling you to get a divorce. However long he was with him, I think they said they were together since they were 17 and she was 37 at that point. So that's like 20 years. Everybody for 20 years telling you, get a divorce, and you let him do it before you did. Girl, excuse me. Anyway, so again, but he did this in the restaurant in front of everybody. He's telling everybody in the restaurant, what are y'all looking at? Y'all need to stop looking at me. But anyway, so he's the one that said, hey, you know what? We're getting this divorce. Okay. So they get home. And again, I think I missed the scene. I missed the scene where, there was a scene before that where, again, he was acting crazy again. She got him out of it. And he was very drunk to where he was saying stuff. But one of the main things, now, I don't know if this really happened because they didn't ever touch back on. I don't know if he said his mom made him kill his dad or he made fought his dad. He said something, okay? But it was a confession. And then also he kept saying, I don't know why you're with me. Again, drunk thoughts or sober thoughts, you guys. Drunk thoughts or thoughts that are inside that, you know, you've been wanting to say. So he kept saying, I don't know why you with me. Like, he basically is telling her, like, I don't treat you right. He knows that. She knows it. But one of the things she said that, again, showed that either she had went through trauma or, again, she has very low self-esteem, which we see a lot in society today. She kept saying, well, I mean, you're still you have a good heart. And I don't know where that heart was. When I say the whole movie, I never saw where that good heart, I didn't even see him do not one good act, not one. So I don't even know where that came from. I think she's trying to convince herself, like, oh, I'm, you know, he has a good heart, I'm helping him. But yes, she was like, well, you know, you've been through a lot. You have a lot of trauma, your childhood, just how you are. But, you know, I'm here. I'm just here to help. And, you know, I'm not going to leave, you know, marriage is for the good and the bad. But girl, nobody told you to be a fool. And I hate when people use the thing of, oh, well, God and marriage and it's sacred. Yeah, it is. But again, I also said God didn't tell you to be a fool. Now, when I say that too, she had so many red flags, so many things that she could have seen and prevented. And if she would have set boundaries in the beginning of their relationship, meaning when they first started dating, not when they got married. But of course, when they got married too, yes, boundaries should be in place. And again, communication skills, just it was so much. But in the beginning, and that's why I tell people, you have to look at red flags and look at to see if there's things that you can or cannot deal with in a relationship, or if they're even fixable. Let's be honest, because a lot of stuff that he had going on from his childhood, his mom, his dad, all of that, brothers, that was nothing he was working towards fixing. And that's something individually he needed to have worked on before he gets with anybody. He can't really love somebody when he's had bad examples, terrible examples of how to love, you know. So what he's seen, again, which we saw later, was his dad had abused his mom the same way that he was abusing her, you know? And brothers too, that's why they were so angry. Like, they operate out of anger because mom was mad that she's getting domestically abused, right? But then again, they're seeing the abuse. So usually when people grow up and they see that, they're either going to be just like them or they're going to try to do their best to do the total opposite, you know? And, you know, but it's still something that when kids see you, they're observing you and they learn by observation, you know, by doing. And so that was something that he needed to individually do. So she could have been got out of that and not even got into it. But again, that low self-esteem is something obviously was going on with her, that she felt like she needed to stay and fix something. And again, after 20 years, he's doing the same stuff, still hitting, spitting, verbally abusing. Come on now. Now, even if you would have did it in the beginning because you're young, because we could even use the excuse before, you was young. Even after that, you were still actively, it's marriage, we're married, and we got to go through thick and thin. That is not the thick that God told us to go through, okay? Tell you to do all that, okay? So that was just another thing that she had said that we can kind of see, like, oh, okay, where her mindset was there. And again, kind of having that low self-worth and self-esteem because she was not getting out of that, not setting boundaries, and felt like that was what she deserved, right? So anyway, they're going through this divorce. Ava goes back home to her mom and her dad. She goes to stay with them for like a week or two. She gets herself together. She starts running again because I guess that was one of her hobbies before she started running. Again, she was beating her time. She was, you know, journaling, doing some self-work. Of course, she had her parents there to help her, you know, just support. Because, of course, let's be honest, when you're going through stuff like that, whether it's a divorce or just anything toxic, it's nothing that nobody can really say to really help you in that moment. You just kind of got to go through it and process it. But it's good to have somebody there to just even be there. So her parents were there. Now, I don't know. Her parents was getting on my nerves a little bit because they kept trying to put Benji. Because remember Benji from the beginning, from the bar? They were trying to, the brothers were trying to beat him up. They said they already beat him up before. I don't know. They kept trying to push him. Like, go ahead. I said, well, Lord have mercy. The parents over here, they using the, you know that saying that they say you get over somebody by getting under somebody else? I said, Lord, they kept pushing Benji, like, Benji, come on, and taking her to places that Benji was going to be. And at first, she was not having it. She was like, look, I'm healing. I just got out of this, I'm actually just going through a divorce now that we, you know, just now got separated and things like that. So, you know, she definitely was not with it. But then sooner or later, he kept popping up. She kept seeing what type of person he was. And also, Benji was also divorced. So that was a thing that, you know. So anyway, going back home for her was good. It was a good reset for her before she went back to Atlanta. And so after she did that, during it, I think one good piece was also with Benji. They finally were getting along. They had their time. They were up all night one night after this affair that was in town. And they were just talking. And then it got to a point where she was like, hey, I want to get drunk. And you know what? Be intimate with me. And he was like, you know, as hard as it is not to do that, because I've wanted you since we were younger, you know, 20 years, 20 plus years ago. I'm not going to do that. Because one, it would be you getting back at him and you having anger at him and you haven't been with anybody else but him, and it wouldn't be about me, and it's not fair to me. And I said, Benji got some high self-esteem, he got some self-worth. Now it could have been also because he's also been through a divorce, he knows how it is, he knows how it feels, he knows, you know, what that stage is for her, this beginning stage was for her. But again, that was a very good emotionally mature response, because again, our flesh does tell us go ahead and do those things. But he knew that it wouldn't be fair to him, and I think that was a good point to even bring up, to show the difference between that, the high self-esteem and the low self-esteem. So that was a good point. But yeah, she gets back to Atlanta, she's feeling much better, and here Dallas come. He saw a picture of her and Benji together, even though they didn't do anything. He saw a picture of it because his brothers were like, see, we've been told you she's been cheating on you this whole marriage. And you see how you got to have, you see how your circle really does play a part. And sometimes in your relationships, like, you have to watch out who you're getting advice from. This is really a good tip. Watch out who you're getting advice from, especially if they're not doing better than you. I don't think any of his brothers were married. And if they are, they doing the same thing, being abusive and trauma bonding with people instead of actually having healthy relationships. You can't get advice from them. They can't keep anybody either. they came from the same roots as you, and none of them are doing better than you. I just couldn't understand that. But the brothers are like, you know, hey, she's been cheating on you this whole time, and we saw her with Benji, and you know, you need to go ahead and get this revenge and all of this. And of course, he's already angry. So here we go again. You don't want her. You can't treat her right. But here he goes angry. He don't want nobody else to have her. That's typical. Typical, typical. So they go, you know, she's at her job. Yes, they're back in Atlanta. She's at her job. And he pops up at the job. The whole movie, he is popping up uninvited everywhere, okay? The whole entire movie. If you go and watch it, or if you've seen it, which hopefully you've seen it if you're watching this, he just kept popping up. Please comment down below if you saw that too. Notice that every single time he popped up somewhere he was not supposed to be and uninvited. But he pops up at the job. He makes a scene at her job The best friend is really on it, though. Rona, because they work together. Rona and Ava, they work at the same job. She's on it. The best friend's like, get out. You know, nope. And now let me say this. Nobody called security. I don't understand that. You had a bank. Security supposed to be there. Nobody ever called security or called the police. I didn't understand that one. But she was like, you know, get out. I don't care about this job. I will hurt you. Get out. I don't care. So sooner or later, he gets out. But, you know, he's still upset. So then I think they go and they're about to sign the papers. Now they're going to sign the papers. Okay. She's signing the papers for the divorce. Why they walk in? Now, Rona goes with Ava. So, you know, she could be there to support her. And here Jim is. So Jim is a lawyer. Remember, that's Rona's husband. Remember, the best friends and the best friends. Jim is there representing Dallas. And see, this is my thing with this. The whole movie, I kept saying Jim, the husband of Rona, you know, Dallas's best friend, he was wishy-washy. And he kept me in a conflict of interest for me because you cannot fully support both. And I'm not even going to say pick a side, because at first I was like, you know, he needed to pick a side, pick the right side, because your friend is wrong. Let's be honest. Your friend was wrong. He's beating everybody up. He has all these issues, you know, from his past that's coming up in his future and how he acts and his emotions. Your friend is wrong. So, you know, you need to come over here and help, you know, Ava out, you know. But no, at first I said pick a side, but at this point he needed to have stayed out of it in general. If you're not going to help out in any way and you're just going to be wishy-washy, keep going back and forth like, oh yeah, Ava, I support you, but friend, just stop. And that's not helping anybody. That's enabling. And he was a good example of what an enabler is in this movie. Because again, he's telling one person, I know that this is not right. He shouldn't be doing this. And I know it's my, but that's my friend. You know what I'm saying? That's enabling. That is my friend. So yes, with that back and forth and the wishy-washiness and him kind of just exhibiting the traits of an enabler, it made it worse when it came to when Ava really needed help. And Dallas actually needed help too. He needs help, obviously. But it shouldn't have been him. He shouldn't have been representing him in a case that he knew was kind of a conflict of interest. I feel like if he was his friend, yes, help him and be his lawyer when it comes to things that are outside of anything that has to also do with his wife too, because now his wife is in a position where it's like, again, like, who are you really helping here? Like, what's right and what's wrong morally, you know? And so they went to go sign the papers, and then that's when Ava was so done. She was at the point where she was actually done. She finally, and I did like how they did show the transition of her kind of being weak and not mentally strong. Again, being a fixer-upper, kind of having low self-esteem, to her gradually like finding herself. And kind of just being stronger and being able to stand up for herself, set those boundaries regardless of what he, you know, what Dallas was doing. So I did like that, that display. From kind of low self-esteem to more of a self-esteem that was more secure, you know? So I did enjoy that. But when Dallas saw that, oh, I can't run over her anymore, she's not listening to me anymore, you know, I said, hey, let's get this divorce, and she just signed a paper. She said, I just signed these papers. It's something turned in him. He was like, wow, he saw he didn't have control over her anymore, which made him even more, basically it just hurt his ego. It hurt his ego. And again, like, I hate using the term narcissist, but that's part of the personality disorder. And a lot of times trauma can make a person and develop that person into a narcissist personality disorder. So he was very ego-driven in general, and it had to be all about him. He was very controlling, didn't really see her. So now she's seeing herself. That is a threat to him. That is a threat to a personality disorder such as narcissism. And so it switched for him. He was like, oh, now it's her fault. Everything is her fault. She's this, she's that. She's been cheating the whole time, even though she wasn't. She doesn't want me anymore. So that automatically means, you know, I was like, here we go. When they put that part in the movie. So now he's just after everybody. He went back home and he threatened her mom in a store, Ava's mom in a store. He was threatening the dad. He was like, go tell your husband too. You know, I know he's going to get a kick out of this and tell him to find me too. I think at that point with Benji, you know, the new guy, the guy from back then that was actually, you know, for her. What did Dallas do? He got his brothers to poison all the animals that he had on his farm. You know, he just started being revengeful, very revengeful. And that happens, you know, sometimes when people are hurt and again, they don't have good emotional regulation and emotional maturity, emotional intelligence, they begin to act out and they don't know what to do. Instead of, again, looking inward to say, okay, what is it that I did wrong? What was wrong in general? And then taking accountability on what he did. It was, oh, now everybody's a problem and I'm going to get everybody because I can't have her and I can't have what I want. Even though, again, he could not really be there in a healthy way to be there for her. So that was a thing. So, you know, the rest of the movie was mostly that, going into that. But again, it showed many themes of, again, like I just said, kind of narcissist personality disorder, how that trauma forced him to be controlling and he didn't get any help. He didn't seek any help. And of course, other people before tried to help him when he was younger. That's what it seemed like. But of course, they were just all... just generational trauma. And that was another point, having that multi-generational trauma where his dad did that. And again, we don't know what happened to Dallas's father, where he got it from, if he saw someone also do it or if he was just that person that felt like he had control over women and he just wanted to abuse. We don't know what happened and what his trauma was, but it probably was. Usually that's how multi-generational trauma occurs as well, when they see it and then they pass it down. To break generational curses is so hard because you really have to say, I cannot be like this. Because again, you are going to be susceptible to doing those things innately, biologically and genetically, right? But then of course, by seeing it and observing it, it's already in you. Like it's natural to do those things or react in the way that your mom or your father reacts, right? So even after his father, he saw that. But also, again, the bitterness of his mother, her not receiving help either. The boys continued to be with her, and she just was controlling as well. You do this, you do this, you do this. And she was always very angry. So, again, just showing how that can be passed down, again, by emotional generational trauma. But then again, like I said, with the friend, him being a good representation of being an enabler. Right, so him being an enabler was definitely annoying the whole movie to me. Again, my mom and my sisters heard me say, I'm tired of him being so wishy-washy, like pick a side or, you know, just stay out of it, because he just wasn't helping anybody. But you know, it definitely was a good example of what an enabler was. And definitely with Rona, one thing I did want to say about her, again, she was a friend that was there to support and really fight for her friend Ava. And she even had wrote a list, like a list after they divorced, of every single thing that Ava had told her that Dallas had done. And it was a long list, y'all. So I was like, woo, Jesus. That was a long list. But it did help her when Ava was able to reread it. And her mom had read it too. But it did help her at a certain point to say, okay, this is everything that happened written down. So one thing I would say too, I tell people all the time, write things down. It gets things out of your head so you won't be susceptible to keep going back. Like, yes, it's going to hurt any type of separation, any type of divorce, any type of, even if you're just in a relationship and there's a breakup, if you're in an unhealthy relationship, sometimes it's okay to take count of those things and not in a way to say, oh, well, I'm keeping count to bring it back up to you if we're in an argument or if something's going on with us, if we're in a disagreement. No, but more so for you. If you know it's not a healthy relationship, you know you need to get out of it. It is something to do and kind of look back and write everything down and say, oh, okay. So it's, you know, because when you're trying to leave, your brain is going to try to gaslight itself. And you're going to tell yourself, oh, well, what if I can't get anybody better? I don't deserve better. And I'm going to stay here. It kind of helps you to see like, okay, hold on now. I don't deserve this. Like all of these things that have happened. And you forgive it and you move past. But again, it's just a cycle that will not stop until you get out of it as well. And so, yes, again, a lot of people on social media were having a lot of mixed reviews. You know, it's a Tyler Perry movie, so some people were saying they didn't like the acting, or he makes the same type of movies, or it's just about black trauma and things like that. But when we are watching movies like this, I always say, look at what you can get from it. Yes, most of the time you just need to do it for entertainment, and I do that too. Because I am a therapist, I try to take my therapist hat off a lot when it comes to watching anything, you know, because I'm like, okay, I want to laugh. I just want to enjoy what I am and watching, especially outside of work. But that movie there, it had so many different themes of what, again, a lot of black people and other cultures too, they go through. But majority of African-American black communities and cultures, again, because what happens in the house stays in the house, and they just never heal from it or seek any type of professional help. And so I just, again, decided to talk about it because I saw so many arguments on social media, so many different perspectives and opinions. So I was like, oh, you know, let's talk about this. So if you have anything that you also got from the movie, anything that you agreed on that I have said, anything that you disagreed on, and that is okay too, comment down below and be active and engage, and we'll have that discussion down in the comments, okay? But again, thank you so much for tuning in to Your Healing Buddy podcast with me, Adina Godette, a licensed psychotherapist. Thank you so much. Hopefully you enjoyed it, and again, come back.